Welcome to Character Explorations, a podcast production of the Wendt Center for Character Education at the University of Dubuque. I'm Annalee Ward, the director of the Wendt Center. Our guest today is Dr. Michelle Grace, Associate Professor of Communication. She's the author of the article, Character and Crisis, Toxic Workplaces and Culture Change. And this article is available online at dbq.edu/Wendt. That's W-E-N-D-T. Welcome, Michelle. You wrote this article for this journal issue on character and crisis. And when I hear the word toxic, at least when I first think about it, I think of chemical contamination. But that's not where you're going with this. Could you give us an example that might help us understand what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, there are quite a few examples for us to learn from, several of which I outlined in this article. But a good place to start, a company that's been in the news quite a bit lately, is Amazon. And I started the article with a quote that really resonated with me, not at my current workplace, obviously, but the quote is, "Nearly every person I worked with, I saw cry at their desk." That to me is the epitome of a toxic workplace. When you are just so frustrated with a situation or a person that there's nothing that you feel you can do but, you know, have that breakdown and cry. At Amazon, you know, again, there have been a lot of stories in the news lately with both their corporate headquarters and their distribution centers, with just having unrealistic work expectations in terms of productivity or working relationships with other people.
Yikes. Difficult environments that we don't enjoy being in. But let's back up a minute, because you talk even in your title about culture. What do you mean by organizational culture?
Well, my favorite definition of organizational culture is one that I learned when I was a grad student, and it's by Deal and Kennedy. And basically, an organizational culture is defined as the way we do things around here, which is pretty vague. But you take that from the organization's mission, what you observe in the way that employees relate to each other, the way that they relate to leadership, and just how the work gets done. And so you can tell pretty quickly how things are done in a particular place and what the true focus is. Is it about the health and welfare of the employees? Is it just the bottom line, that dollar figure? Is it a combination of the two? So paying attention to the culture and how you fit into that culture will determine whether that's a good environment for you.
So then when you're looking at an organization and you talk about toxic culture, what kinds of things would define a toxic culture?
A quick, easy one is lying, which is one of the things that I looked at in this article with Theranos, which has also been in the news and the subject of a couple documentaries and even a television show, where in this particular case, employees are basically being lied to, but they're also not given the information they need to do their job. So when we talk about this in organizational communication a lot, silos. So when the marketing department and the sales department and the research department don't communicate with each other, that's very unhealthy. And if I don't have the information I need to do my job, that's an example of a toxic environment.
So you also mentioned, like, you went into detail on some of these examples. One that might surprise people is NASA. Mm-hmm. You talked about the Challenger explosion, and some of us older folks who remember it being attributed to a faulty O-ring. Mm-hmm. Why would that be an example of a toxic culture?
It's one of my favorite examples, and it's one that I teach in organizational communication every semester. And so basically, yeah, a 32-cent piece of rubber was the cause of the Challenger explosion. But of course, that wasn't really the issue. The issue was communication. So at NASA, in 1986, when the Challenger was set to orbit, NASA had been, you know, they were in the middle of the space shuttle missions, and it kind of got to be commonplace where we weren't as interested anymore. People weren't gathered around their TV to watch every launch like they did in the 60s and 70s. So NASA felt a lot of pressure with this particular launch because they were trying something new. They had a teacher on board, and this teacher, Krista McAuliffe, was going to give lessons from space, which was really exciting. So the NASA culture dictated that launch supersedes everything. So they had already had to delay due to cold weather in Florida. And they were going to have to delay again because the O-rings don't hold up when the weather's below, I can't remember what temperature, but a colder temperature. So they wanted to delay that launch again. But because of pressure from television stations, the government, all kinds of places, NASA really felt that pressure to launch this ship. So a lot of people were basically told to just keep their mouth shut and let things go. So, and I say this in the article, they were in an environment of keep your head down and your mouth shut. And we all know what happened. Well, most of us know what happened in January of 1986 when that shuttle barely made it off the launch pad. And so NASA really did take that to heart and revamped their culture and went from that keep your head down and your mouth shut atmosphere to a speak up loud and clear culture.
Okay, so communication is key, a key element. You talk about the silos and that key element to creating a better culture. And then that Theranos example that you mentioned, could you walk us through just maybe some of the elements of toxicity that you see there?
Definitely. So Theranos started out as a really promising new company, and a lot of people were very invested in the success of Theranos. There were so many good things about it in the beginning. It was a young female CEO. She was the first person in Silicon Valley to get millions of dollars in funding to begin her organization. The concept of the company was great. Basically, instead of having to get a blood draw from a vein every time you needed a medical test done, you could just prick your finger and get a couple of drops. It all sounds great. And a lot of people were very excited about this. But of course, the people who were in the know knew that there are certain medical tests and things that you can't do with just two drops of blood. So the company was really doomed to fail from the beginning, but that certainly didn't stop the founder of the company, Elizabeth Holmes, and her partner, Sunny Balwani. The culture became toxic when they basically just kept moving forward and blindly searching for a way to make this work, even though they both knew it wasn't going to. So they kept getting funding and employing people. And when those people at the company tried to point out the failures, they were either let go or moved to a different department where they couldn't affect the product outcomes.
So Theranos is, or sounds like it was, definitely a toxic culture that involved a lot of different aspects of toxicity. Could you summarize that for us?
Right. So there are a lot of different elements that go into a toxic environment. So I'm just going to share the definition that I used while I was writing this paper. So a workplace that is marked by significant drama and infighting, where personal battles often harm productivity. Toxic workplaces are often considered the result of toxic employers and/or toxic employees who are motivated by personal gain, consisting of power, money, fame, or special status. They use unethical, mean-spirited, and sometimes illegal means to manipulate and annoy those around them, and whose motives are to maintain or increase power, money, or special status, or to divert attention away from the performance shortfalls and misdeeds. Toxic workers do not recognize a duty to the organization for which they work for or their coworkers in terms of ethical or professional conduct toward others. Toxic workers define relationships with coworkers not by organizational structure, but by coworkers they favor and those who they do not like or trust. And to me, that just exemplifies Theranos.
Not that it's great to have a good example of a definition, but that's mm-hmm. a good example of a definition. So we have this problem in some organizations, but we don't want to stop there. We want to think about change, and change often calls for courageous action. It calls for an individual action very often. But in the face of a broad culture, what could an individual do, say at Theranos even?
That's the thing where most employees get stuck. I know myself, I have worked in toxic environments in the past, and you do feel really helpless. So as an individual, there are a couple of things you can do. One is to look out for number one and leave that organization. But depending on the situation, one thing that happened at Theranos was that there were two very brave individuals who did speak up and actually went outside the company to other organizations, either the government or regulating bodies, and blew the whistle. So whistleblowing, which is something I talk about quite a bit in the article as well, is one thing that you can do to help to remedy that situation, or at least to not harm more people in the process.
It's dangerous, though, isn't it, to be a whistleblower?
It's incredibly dangerous. There, I also talk about a couple of movies in this article where people blew the whistle in workplace situations. And again, for us older folks, a movie that many of us are familiar with is Silkwood, where Karen Silkwood worked at a plant where there was nuclear energy, and they were not being as protective as they should have been. So Karen took it upon herself to speak out and raise awareness. Now, it's never been proven, but she did die in a car accident on the way to an interview with a news organization. And many people believe that was the product of her speaking out. Another example that I have is another movie called The Insider, where Russell Crowe played a former executive from a tobacco company, and he blew the whistle. And you can watch thousands of YouTube videos about tobacco executives denying the fact that they knew that tobacco and nicotine were addictive. So the person that Russell Crowe portrayed in this movie blew that whistle at great expense to himself and his family.
There have been more recent developments, haven't there, in Congress to help protect whistleblowers?
In 2010, Congress passed a bill called the Frank Dodd Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. And this was designed to not only provide protection and compensation for the whistleblowers, but to protect them from retaliation. So anyone who decides to blow the whistle, it is a very difficult decision. And that person knows that that's going to come with risks to themselves. But this law at least gives them a little bit of protection in terms of compensation and basically just threats to themselves and their families.
All right. Thank you. So individuals at an organization had two options, quit or whistleblow. Other individuals at organizations or coming in other words, the top leadership has a role or could have a role in changing a toxic environment. Do you have any examples of this kind of work?
Yes, this was my positive example of a toxic environment and how it can be fixed. So this example deals with Volkswagen, which was really under fire in 2014. They were caught having discrepancies in road emission testing. So basically, they had programmed the computers in the cars to project false EPA standards. So this all really came to a head, and VW responded by firing the CEO and then appointing Matthias Mueller to come in and take over Volkswagen. And Matthias did a really good job, not of just protecting himself, but he really changed the culture at Volkswagen so that this would not be an issue going forward. He admitted the wrongdoing, publicly apologized, fixed the millions of vehicles that were affected by those emissions data, and just made all kinds of internal changes to make the environment less toxic at Volkswagen. He considered that the old guard was responsible for this, so he flattened his organization. So instead of having those multiple layers of directors and vice presidents and senior vice presidents, he flattened that organizational structure so that a lot more people were directly reporting to him instead of having to go through the multiple layers of leadership to get to the top.
Okay, so leadership matters. Confronting and changing this toxic kind of culture calls for courageous action. We've already said that. But that's a strength of character. And for those leaders who might be facing this kind of work, you've suggested a couple of strategies for how to go about it. Perhaps you want to just highlight a couple of those.
Sure. There are a couple of different strategies that I outlined in the article. One is designed for changing behaviors, and the other is designed to examine the culture through its people. So one is called ASA, Attraction, Selection, Attrition. And this is the framework that you can use when people are the issue at the organization. And so you really need to change individuals. And the BEAR model, which stands for Beliefs, Experiences, Action, and Results, is meant for changing behavior. So we all act in this particular way. And so we need to change that moving forward so that we can achieve the culture that we want to have at this organization.
Good reminders that change can be envisioned and can be worked on in very specific ways. Behaviors, actions, people, terrific. So a toxic culture is affected by toxic people, and a toxic culture can change by people with good character. As we bring this discussion to a close, was there any final thoughts you wanted to add or any last words you'd like to give us?
Just that a toxic culture can be fixed. So if you happen to find yourself in a situation, maybe you started at a company and you really thought it was going to be a good fit for you based on your interview or the mission of that organization, and things aren't just aren't working out the way that you had hoped, really think about your position in that organization. Is it a personality conflict? Is it just not what you signed up for? Can it be fixed? Organizational change happens all the time. And, you know, change really is the only constant in life. So think about whether that change can occur. Even though it won't happen quickly, you can be an agent for change and to make that environment more like what you wanted it to be.
Thank you for that. And thank you for that reminder that change is possible, but requires character rooted in a vision for creating a workplace where people matter and where that environment is safe and productive. That does not happen without thoughtful, character-filled leadership and employees, and we all have a role in that. Our guest today has been Dr. Michelle Grace, Associate Professor of Communication, and I'm Annalee Ward for Character Explorations from the Wendt Center for Character Education at the University of Dubuque.